Okay, welcome back to another session in the Laws of Life. Tonight we're examining the law of cause and effect, the divine law of cause and effect. Our question is, in fact, what is the divine law of cause and effect, and how can an aspirant best harness it? I've shuffled the cards, laid them out, and we have, as you can see on the screen, the starting point is temperance, upside down. Temperance is number 14 in the major arcana, which makes a 5. The counterpoint is the Ace of Cups, up right side up, and it's obviously an ace. The challenge is the Three of Pentacles upside down. It's a 3. The purpose is the Ten of Pentacles upside down. It's a 1. The endowment is the Two of Cups upside down. The destiny is the Hanged Man upside down, which makes him look right side up, but that would be defying gravity. The Hanged Man is number 12 in the major arcana. That's a 3. Then we come to the Pillar of Revelation. We have the Four of Swords right side up in the position of the real question. We have the Three of, or the Hermit, I'm sorry to say, the Hermit upside down, not that I'm sorry that it's the Hermit, but I meant to say the Hermit instead of the Three of something or another. But you see, the Hermit is upside down, so I looked at T-H-E-H-E-R, and that came out as 3. That's just a blip of the mind. It could have come out Hermes, you see, because of the Hermit, Herm. Anyway, that's the position of the unseen forces. The spiritual ideal is the devil. What, the Hermit? Hermit is 9 in the major arcana. Then we go on to the spiritual ideal, which is the devil, and that's number 15 or a 6. But they're also in the major arcana. And then we come to the fulfillment, which is another 6. This is, in fact, the 6th card in the major arcana, the Lovers, right side up. The devil and the Lovers both were right side up. So we end up with 4 upright cards, the Lovers, the devil, the Four of Swords, and the Ace of Cups, and all the rest are upside down. We have 5 majors, indicating that this is a very significant and important law. We have 1 sword, no rods, 2 cups, and 2 pentacles. Now, in spite of the fact that we have no rods, the mind is certainly not absent from this. The point is that this affects the mind at abstract levels, as we can see with the Hermit. It's the archetypal intuitive dimension of the mind that is activated by it. And we'll talk about that anon. But the mind is capable of studying this, examining this, exploring it, learning to work with the law of cause and effect, but it also learns how to master and harness it, so it becomes a controlling creative force here. So, the impact is more directly on the emotions and the physical plane, hence cups and pentacles. So, I want to talk a little bit about this. If you're stunned by the devil showing up, don't be. That's in the level of position of the spiritual ideal, so it must be fairly ideal. And in fact, the law is called the law of cause and effect. So those are inseparably joined at the hip, as it were. And we can see that. We can see the action of duality or polarity involved through several cards. The devil, the lovers, the two of cups, even the hanged man suggests a reversal of polarity. And so cause and effect is that which joins the higher and the lower. when I talk about being created or made of cosmic fabric, this is part of the cosmic fabric we're made of, the law of cause and effect. And so let's go straight to temperance. Temperance is, of course, an angelic presence that embraces the whole of life. Those wings spread out and really have one heck of a wingspan. And it represents the omnipresent nature of the divine mind, omniscience. And through long eons, temperance, the law of cause and effect working on earth, refines and purifies substance and elevates it so that eventually we as intelligent human beings start working with causal forces, not with effects. But in the beginning, so this is a universal principle. It works whether we believe in it or not. It has, a lot of people think of it in terms of karma. I tend to think that cause and effect is much greater than karma. Karma is the reactive principle of life. It's the knee-jerk, instant reaction. That if you're on a seesaw, for example, if you go up, the other side goes down. That's karma. So yes, if you hold your hand in a flame, it will burn. And you can't blame God for that. You can only blame your own stupidity. But this is so much more than the law of karma, which is just a reactive principle. It is a key to thinking intelligently. I talked about the rising mind in this morning's ATM. And, of course, the mind is rising from the intellectual perception to the abstract intuitive perception. Understanding and harnessing the law of cause and effect is a way of learning to work intuitively, learning to discern the future and the past simultaneously. But as is revealed in the hourglass and the fable of the hourglass, we don't have to worry about past and present and future because the past is reproduced constantly in the future and vice versa. That's the meaning of the law of cause and effect. As you know, this law is expressed in the phrase, as you sow, so shall you reap. It implies that every action we have results in an effect, and so this is a tremendous spur to developing our determination to act wisely and with divine inspiration. But in fact, where people go astray with the law of karma or the principle of karma is that they look at far too finite a level. They keep on thinking, I wonder what I did earlier in this lifetime or in some earlier lifetime or whatever to create the mess I'm in right now. And in fact, causal forces are much more distant than that in most cases. You might have to go back into not only a previous lifetime, but a previous solar system to find the root causes of some of the events happening today. And excuse me. It's important to understand that because the way to find out what a causal force is to actually define the force at work and then trace it back in your mind, using your mind to explore this back to its roots. And if you're limited in any way, if you're limited by your own purview, if you're limited by a social attitude that human life began 10,000 years ago or 20,000 years ago and nothing significant happened before then, if you think that this country was founded 230 years ago and nothing significant happened before that, you're missing the point. And that is that the country as a whole, religious groups as a body, all these entities have roots in the distant past, not just a few thousand years ago, but far longer than that, and at abstract levels. So we need to trace ourselves back to our cosmic fabric and understand what we signed on for and what we're good for, basically. And then we begin to get an insight into the noble purpose. But you can't understand beauty just based on this moment's expression of beauty. That's just a clue. That's just a twinkling of a star. You have to trace it back to when you first began to respond to the vibrations of beauty. How you've worked to refine your concept and your understanding of it. So with that little preface in mind, let's charge ahead here. And we're still talking about temperance. And temperance as a card refers to the purification of and the transfer of energy from abstract universal levels into finite expression. And temperance, as I suggested, is an angelic force. It's, in some ways, the monadic force of humanity. But we're here to bring divine force as agents. We're agents of God. We're here to bring divine force into all we do, whether it's beauty or harmony or goodwill or compassion or wisdom or joy. We're here to bring it down into the earth plane. And so the greatest demonstration of cause and effect to us is to go back and find out what motivates us to turn inward and to discover the abstract dimensions of life and to understand that that's the source of all things. That this is cause and effect. Cause is abstract. Effect is physical. It's what you build from opportunity. So opportunity and manifestation would be the same as cause and effect. And the temperance operates through the human mind as the mind focuses on, and I'm talking about the abstract human mind, not the finite intellect, but those wings spread out to an immense dimension. And of course, the wings are figurative. They are the energy of omniscience, but they embrace everything. So you can't, expression of understanding the law of cause and effect and harnessing it requires us to work at abstract levels, at learning to work as the angelic force behind temperance would work. So with that in mind, let's go on then to our counterpoint, which is the Ace of Cups. The Ace of Cups is this huge cup standing on the top of a lotus pond or a lily pond. And all these wonderful lotuses and lilies are blooming. And the cup is radiating energy. And this is a reference to what I called the sphere of influence in the last seminar on individuality. We have the opportunity to find a sphere of influence and make it larger and larger. And then we become a master of cause and effect within that sphere of influence. And that's what this represents. The sphere of radiation, the sphere of influence, is one of four elements of cause and effect, according to the Tibetan. The first is the point at the center. The second is the related energies. The third is the sphere of influence. The fourth is the central triangle of energies. Now, you don't need to learn all that, but just understand that the law of cause and effect operates and controls the circulation and evolution of all energies, not just physical or emotional, but mental and abstract, intuitive, monadic, etc. All energies that we might work with operate under this law. And so the ability to work at abstract levels with this gives us the ability to go back and understand the past and go forward and understand what's likely to happen in the future. There's many great revelations that illustrate this point. And often they're just tossed away observations by the Tibetan in all those Alice Bailey books. But at one point in one of them, he mentions that the reason why so many species of animals are going extinct at this point is karmic. 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 years ago, whenever, when the emerging human race was very defenseless and had yet organized into communities for self-protection, the individual families, and this, of course, was obviously true right up until about 100 years ago in this country, individual families were at the mercy of wild beasts, and the wild beasts did not exercise self-restraint and say, "Oh, I don't think I'll go eat that human. It'll give me bad karma." Probably gave them indigestion, actually. But the wild beasts just went for it. They couldn't restrain the easy picking, so to speak. And little did they know that sooner or later, humans were going to invent bows and arrows and then guns. And they could take those guns and shoot the wild beasts. And weren't they surprised when that happened? But you see, that's cause and effect. A bully pushes around a 97-pound weakling. The 97, sooner or later, the 97-pound weakling is going to take Jack Armstrong course, or whoever it was, Mr. America, and learn to build up his muscles so that the next time the bully comes along, he'll sock him a good one. And then the bully will go running back to mommy and say, "Hoo, hoo, 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 hoo. That 97-pound weakling hit back. He wasn't supposed to. He hit back." Well, that's the perfect example of karma, cause and effect at work. You take advantage. This is the union of the opposites. So the devil card is suggesting that sometimes we see this as the division of the opposites, the division of male and female against one another. But in the final result, they come back and they reunite, and the concept of wholeness returns, reunion returns. And in a way, this is symbolically portrayed in the Earthsea Trilogy, where the two rings have been estranged.
One ring, isn't it? It's broken.
One ring has been broken to two halves. Maybe that's it. In any event, Ged has to go out and find the two parts and put them back together again. And that's the story of human evolution as we grapple with this all-important law of cause and effect. But the counterpoint, the Ace of Cups, represents the drive that each of us has to expand our sphere of influence. First, to conquer territory, but eventually to influence more and more people or life forms within our reach. And we build a sphere of influence, and this represents a major step forward. But in doing that, we have to act with propriety and wisdom so that we don't misuse the law of cause and effect. Law of cause and effect, it's interesting. I went back and looked, and there are three of these cards. I believe the Hanged Man, the Four of Swords, and the Hermit.
Yeah.
All appeared in the last session on the law of cohesion. Mm-hmm. And in similar positions, the Four of Swords was in the purpose position, if I'm not mistaken. It's now in the position of the real question, but both of those were the bottom of their pillars. The Hangman was the endowment, now it's the destiny. And the Hermit was the spiritual ideal, now it's the unseen forces. So there's a great deal of similarity between the law of cohesion and the law of cause and effect. in terms of how it affects human thinking. This is a big clue to developing the mind, to develop the rising mind, as I talked about it. And that is, the more you look for the big picture, the more you rise up to a higher perspective, the more you're able to work at abstract levels and harness the law of cause and effect. So, and ideas cohere to your ideas, and you develop sympathetic wavelengths with other people who see eye to eye with you. And this is what the Ace of Cups is suggesting, that as we work with the mind to trace effects back to their causes, we understand more and more what brought us to where we are and who we've brought along with us, who are marching to the sound of the same drummer, same drum beat. And it's very important to understand this because, again, I can't say this enough, but I probably will. And that is that the events of today make no sense of finite interpretation. To understand the conditions in this country, the conditions of church, the conditions of humanity as a whole, we have to go back to earlier antecedents. And so, for example, one of the things that the Tibetan reveals in his many books is that the karmic antecedent of the gas chambers in Nazi Germany, the gassing of the Jews and others, the karmic antecedent was that these people were all part of the barbaric hordes that overran the libraries of Alexandria and wiped out 50,000 years of human insight and understanding, which is anybody standing in the face of anybody deliberately keeping humanity from learning and growing incurs the greatest karmic debt of all, because that's an insult to the plan of God. So there was no real way to atone for that error of destroying the libraries of Alexandria. But they incarnated as a group and volunteered for lifetimes, which would end in the gas chambers, to atone for the heinous crime against humanity earlier on. And there are many, many examples like this scattered throughout the writings of the Tibetan. We seldom have any understanding of how linked the current events of life are to earlier situations. And we have to be able to think in those terms to make sense of them. Hence, the linkage between the current war on terror and earlier tendencies of humanity to rule by terror and dominate by terror. And we're going through we have the potential here for genuine transition from a terror-based society to a society free of terror. And it's very important for our future to do so. So there are these greater explanations, these greater causes, and not limited just to events that have transpired on Earth. But sometimes it has to do with events that have transpired somewhere else in the galaxy of which we're part of. And there's no way that the finite human mind can conceive of these connections. But that's the reason for escaping the finite levels of thinking and starting to work abstractly, and not to put boundaries and limits on our understanding. Okay, so we've talked about the point and the counterpoint, the starting point and the counterpoint. Any comments before I move on? Any comments or questions? Yes.
Carl.
Yes, Dorothy.
With the, for example, with the war on terror.
Right.
If the United States is a country that has been relatively free of terror terror during our existence. Is that one of the reasons why we are leading the way, that we know how to live without terror?
Well, I think we have the potential to live without terror, but I think it's a case where we've learned, I think there's a strong case to be made for the fact that the Spirit of America was earlier a spiritual force guiding at least part of the nation of Atlantis, and it was a noble creative influence in humanity at the time, in the world at the time, and therefore we inherit a fair amount of very beneficial karma leading to opportunity. But again, the karma doesn't guarantee that we'll do well with this opportunity. It gives us opportunities, and yes, it does give us a certain undefinable credence when we lead a war on terror, in spite of all the protestations and condemnations from other countries. They listen and they heed and they follow to some degree. We have a certain measure of moral authority, which nobody can understand, but it dates back to earlier incarnations of the Spirit of America. So it's more than what the humans have done. It's what the spirit that currently we call the Spirit of America has done in the past. And it's these abstract forces, very distant, distant in terms of the distant past, decisions made that shape the current lifetime. The fact that somebody might spend a lifetime addicted to drugs may be attributed to a weak character in this lifetime, but it may also go back thousands and thousands, billions of years, and be a response to their ray type, perhaps at the monadic level or at the soul level, or maybe even at the personality level. And so they have a unique opportunity and a unique potential to help people develop self restraint and discipline, but they give it focus by seemingly waste a life as a drug addict, and then they come back the next lifetime with a strong determination not to do that again, and in fact to help, as I've indicated on numerous other occasions. The way this works is, if you spend a lifetime as a drug addict, you're basically saying, I volunteer to help eliminate drugs as a problem in future lifetimes, especially if you sell drugs or promote them in that way. So there are a lot of times we, with our finite minds, pass judgment on other people without knowing any of the real reasons why they're in their predicament. And we should have a certain amount of humility to understand that God works in mysterious ways, as wonders to behold. And we should never forget that. We may think we understand, but again, it's the sort of thing where, for example, with people who get cancer, sometimes it's a step forward to get cancer and burn off certain types of negativity. It might be a person on the spiritual path who seizes this opportunity to burn off a great amount of negativity that couldn't have been burned off any other way. And so they volunteered to die of cancer, not get better. And in fact, one of our good friends died a couple of years ago, and he died of cancer of the tongue, which is rare, but a horrible way to do it. And he, very advanced individual, who was basically, I think, passing the fourth initiation of renouncing the body. And quite often that's the way that, through some physical illness, not everybody gets a chance to be crucified on a cross. Sometimes you're crucified on cancer. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very difficult. Only a master really has the capacity to look at this and understand. I've gotten glimpses of this through the various readings and reports I've done on people as I look back into their past lifetime, how one lifetime led to the next lifetime, leading to the next lifetime, leading to something quite dramatic and spectacular, a talent, a skill. These are all built up through cause and effect. But they all happen at abstract levels of consciousness, not in the physical form. Does that answer your question, or did I just wander all over the place?
No, that was great. Just a follow-up question. If, for example, I am being impatient in a conversation with someone, and then I catch myself, sometimes...
Get to your point, Dorothy. Get to your point.
I'm practicing patience, yes.
Yes. I'm trying to help you.
Yes, thank you. I will think in terms of not really going back in just in general terms that, okay, I kind of smile at myself. All right, let's pull back. Let's be patient with that person. Let's be patient with myself here. And then it helps clear things up a bit. But is it should there be more exploration of that, like in a meditation?
Sure. The more you can trace back and understand how these things work. And the person you're impatient with may never have crossed your path in previous lives. A lot of karma is not one-on-one karma, it's generic karma. You wait for a situation to come up that gives you the opportunity to learn the lesson. And so any human being can easily imagine having been impatient yesterday, probably. You don't have to go back today, yes. Earlier today. So you don't necessarily have to go back and find something from 500 years ago that you're burning off here. But the way this works is, as we'll see when we get to the cards of duality, the Two of Cups and the Devil and the Lovers and whatnot, you are your own Lord of Karma. You carry around the need to work out certain imbalances. And you draw to you somebody that can do that for you by bugging you and driving you up the wall with impatience or whatever. And then you can chuckle and smile and back down and say, oh, I'll just accept this for what it is, and I'll invoke patience. And then, voila, you've transformed your character. And so this is a very important aspect of learning and growing and learning to use the mind to build. And in fact, if we go on to the third card, the card of challenge, we see the Three of Pentacles. And the Three of Pentacles, this is, of course, the little guy here is either writing his name all over the place, Kilroy was here, or he is working to build the cathedral and put the finishing touches on. And so this is a card of building. And we remember the instruction from Casey, the mind is the builder. And so here we are. The whole purpose of the law of cause and effect is to give us a means for constructing the pyramids of human thought, or in this case, the temples of human thought. We do it brick by brick, stone by stone, pillar by pillar, until we have a complete edifice and a thing of beauty. But these are the talents and skills. The law of cause and effect is what helps us refine our talents and skills, because we get put into situations where we're defenseless against wild beasts with fangs and gleaming eyes. And we may not have any way to defend ourselves in that lifetime, and we get eaten as a wolf's dinner. But the next lifetime we come around, and by God, we learn about fire and arrows and how to shoot arrows at wolves, and we stop that wolf dead in his tracks. And we don't, but our incentive has been the previous experience and the need to learn something to make sure that we never are in that position again. And by the same token, we may just come back and decide early on in our career, we might decide, hey, if I got five other people to live in a community, we would be able to take on any wolf that came in here and kill it and eat it. Mm-hmm. And they would be protected and I would be protected. And so he goes out and starts the arduous work of convincing people, hey, it would be a good idea for you to join my community here and elect me chief. And that's when they will say, what's in it for me? And graft is created. But no, he says, well, would you, if you don't want to do that, just live by yourself and be eaten by wolves. See what I care. But I'm offering you a way to protect against wolves, you see. And nobody remembers that they both were eaten by wolves in a previous lifetime, but now they're determined not to be eaten by wolves. That's the way the law of cause and effect, the law of karma, is meant to work. Of course, we managed to distort it and change things around all the time. But we're building talents and skills. We're building an inner connection to divine law through temperance, which allows us to bring heaven to earth. Okay, then we come down to the purpose card, the Ten of Pentacles. And the Ten of Pentacles is this little family looking out at the city of God on the far mountain through an archway. And this is very significant because they unite the past, the present, and the future all in one. First of all, it's the man and the woman have joined together, even though they're opposites, to produce the little brat down there. And they're looking forward to the future, to the city of God on the hill. But the brat is looking backwards. The immature parts of this one individual is looking back to the past. And so it's the law of cause and effect that links us mentally to the past and to the future and helps us understand the present. That the problems of the present are meant to be springboards that propel us into the future. They're also meant to be opportunities to clean the slate of our wretched excesses from the past. But the important thing here is the archway. And the archway is something that no human could ever think of on his own. The ability to build an arch with a keystone that would not collapse. That was the great achievement of the Roman Empire, was to construct arches and all those causeways and irrigation bridges that brought water from the mountains, the Swiss Alps, down into Rome to irrigate the crops and water everything and give the citizens water. So the arch is a symbol of the inner perfection, the inner ideal perfection, the archetypal nature of life. And as we work with cause and effect, the real art is to trace it back to the archetypal pattern, not to some specific event. We trace events in the physical plane up to the abstract mind above the mean, and we find the archetype, the spiritual ideal that we're meant to be harnessing and working with. And then that gives us the talent and the skill to discern divine patterns that are already created and to use them in building a better life on earth, whether it's an arch or a bridge or a community not based on fear of wolves but on mutual participation. It doesn't make much difference. But the past, present, and future come together in this way to evoke the golden mean, the perfect balance represented by this arch. Okay, then we go to the endowment, the Two of Cups, and that's a man and a woman staring, Google-eyed at each other, and the cups are touching and form infinity. And this is, we've discovered the principle of duality. We may not have harnessed it yet, but we somehow, even most immature members of humanity understand the principle behind a man and a woman coming together and forming a union to create something greater than was in the past. So here we're seeking to yoke together or unify the finite and the abstract, the cause and the effect. And yes, it's the masculine and the feminine. It's the active and the negative, or the positive and the negative, the active and the reactive. That's what the law of karma is, by the way. It's just the law of reaction. And so that if you kick a stone out of place, the stone will do what it can to return to its perfect balance. Every action creates an opposite and equal reaction. So this is the law of karma, which is a subset of the law of cause and effect. A cause without an effect is pointless. An effect without a cause is disastrous. So we need to start thinking in those terms, and the more we can adapt our mind. But this is an above-below kind of thing. The inner and the outer. The cause and the effect. And we see this again when we come over to the card of destiny, the sixth card, the hangman, upside down, number 12. And, of course, if reversed and seen upright, it looks like he's falling from the tree, but he's held there by that rope. And so we need to trace back everything that happens to us, everything that we think, to its higher correspondence. Always looking for the big picture, the higher correspondence that truly nurtures us. And, of course, that's the soul. It's the soul that nurtures our growth. It's not just dumb luck. It's not just random chance. It's the soul. And so we withdraw from our finite perceptions of life and entertain infinite possibilities. And that's the basic movement here of this law. And the law helps us do this and understand it. Okay, again, before I go into the pillar of revelation, any comments or questions about the law of cause and effect at this point? We've now laid the groundwork, and we're about to go in for the higher implications. Any comments or questions?
Carl,
yes.
Carl, you're saying that really we should be tracing back how we learn to work with archetypal energies.
Right.
Rather than viewing what's happened in life as, rather than viewing, looking at the effects, we should be looking at those causes, which are basically archetypal energies.
Right.
Now, and you're saying really trace back all.
Absolutely.
With all of the energies.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let me put it this way. There is the common cliche, which you all know to disregard, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Uh-huh.
And actually, beauty is in the mind of God, but that's not something that the average person understands. So the basis of this is Joe Schmo goes over to Gibbs Garden and walks through it and spends his whole time talking on his cell phone, missing all the beauty around him. And then he is asked on his way out, well, did you enjoy it? And he says, it didn't impress me. I didn't see much of anything. Of course, he wasn't looking either. He was all tied up in his personal life. And so the idea that beauty is in the mind of the beholder is a reactive one.
Ah.
What?
Ah.
In the eye of the beholder, yeah. Sorry. Is the principle of reaction. You go out, you see a glorious daylily opening up, and you say, ah, that's beautiful. But do you say it's beautiful because I say it's beautiful, or it's beautiful because you've entered into the, you've traced the beauty you see back to its essence in the mind of God? And of course, as DK frequently says, the beauty that you can perceive here on earth, physical beauty, is nothing compared to the glories of the archetypal patterns that give rise to that beauty on earth. You ain't seen nothing yet. It's a dull, monodimensional representation of the true beauty, which is multidimensional, and causing glory from every corner. So, yes, we absolutely owe it to ourselves to trace the beauty that we see in the flower back to its essence multidimensionally, because we will be richly rewarded. We will, Rose and I were reading one of the Dave Duncan books this afternoon, and the main character of this particular sub-story in the book is an artist, and he was trying to sketch a very beautiful woman who he loved but was unable to obtain. Anyway, he was sketching her, and he could sketch her stature, the way she looked and everything, no problem. But what he wasn't able to capture and felt totally inadequate to do so was the inner spirit that animated her and made her special to him. He just couldn't get that inner glow to come down on the paper. He could recognize it. He couldn't reproduce it. Now, I would argue that a great painter, a Rembrandt, a Dali, whatever, these people are able to capture that inner light, that inner spirit, and find a way to bring it through into the visage that they're creating on their canvas. A good writer will do the same thing and will pay more attention to that inner essence than to the outer arrangement of words or symbols or whatever it might be. So yes, we should always trace it back and not put finite limits on what we discover. As long as we're putting finite limits on what we're going to discover, we'll stay at the finite level of intellect rather than enter into the creative splendor above the mean.
Carl, is that what's referred to as choosy life or choosy death? To me, that came to mind when you were talking.
Sounds good to me. Where's that? What's that a reference to?
I can't remember.
Okay.
Help me.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. That's why I was asking.
Okay. It just came to mind as you were talking that if you choose to look at things archetypally, you can see how that's life.
Sure.
And it ever expands it. If you choose to interpret life according to events, I mean, it's just a dead end.
Absolutely. Really. Absolutely. And there is no wisdom in an event or a form unless we put it there.
You see. Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments or questions before we move on? This is how important the law of cause and effect is. It's a to human beings, to spiritual aspirants, it's a great law to use to build the mind, to build talents, to build our expression as an agent, to learn the ropes as an agent of God here on earth, an agent of light. Okay, moving on to the pillar of revelation. This is kind of what I just said kind of jumps the gun here. The real question is the four of swords. We've got three swords on three pillars, very similar to the three of pentacles in a cathedral or something or another. He is lying in state. That fourth sword did him in, and it's down here on his bier, on his coffin. The So the question is, the real question is, what is the cause that led me here? What is the causal force that led to this predicament? And that in that will come the understanding. Why am I confined and restricted in this way? Why has my contract suddenly been ended? Why have I been fired? Why this? Why that? The only way you're going to understand it is to say, well, what are the causal forces that led me to this? What do I have to learn? How can I take this seemingly disconnected event and see its connection to the life above the mean? And each of those swords is not threatening him, but is the causal force coming into his life. And why am I suffering from this loss? What is there to gain? What has led me to this juncture? What are the opportunities unfolding for me if I move correctly? And this is again, a card that appeared, as I said before, in cohesion with the card of purpose in the spread on cohesion. And it suggests that, again, everything that's real in life comes from the inner plane, comes from above the mean, comes from higher sources. And even if we have gotten ourselves into a real tight corner, we have to try to understand what is trying to express itself through me, mentally, emotionally, and physically, monadically at the level of the soul and at the level of the personality, the three swords. What the Tibetan referred to as the central triangle of energies. That's the central triangle here, the three swords. We go back until we find the trinity that explains our predicament. There is no such thing as a predicament. There's only a matrix of opportunity. Then we go on to the unseen forces. We have the hermit. The hermit is in his mauve nightgown or purple nightgown, lavender nightgown. And he's got his little lamp and he's exploring through the archives, through the archetypal levels of life. And he serves the plan. He serves truth. And so this reminds us that as we trace these specific events in form in the finite life back to their abstract origins, we discover not only something about the beauty and the glory of the divine life and how well it's organized, but we discover the antecedents, the energies that we've been serving all this time and never realizing. So it's a way of working with the law of cause and effect is a great way of organizing the abstract mind. It is the way the abstract mind of God is organized. So we need to work in the same way. And then this gives us the spiritual, leads us to the spiritual ideal, which is the devil. And the devil at first doesn't seem to deserve this good a reputation, but in fact, temptation is what draws us down into the finite world and traps us there. And the seeming split of male and female into duality is what characterizes all of form. As long as we remember that the Two of Cups were meant to pledge our troth to our opposite equal, to the soul, to God as a companion of his life or the soul's life, then we can understand that the split is an illusion. Nothing divides us. And that could be a mantra. Nothing divides. Nothing, what's the old Brooke Shield commercial? Nothing comes between me and my, what was the name? Jeans, some Levi's or something, I don't know. Calvin Klein. Calvin Klein. Nothing comes between me and my Calvin Klein. And of course, she's wearing nothing at all, except her Calvin Klein. So we can adapt that to nothing divides me from God. Nothing. Nothing divides me from the divine. And in other words, by sensing, by evaluating these things, if we find that we are in the throes of a division, we need to trace both divided elements back to their common origin in the mind of God, in the abstract. And then we reunite them. We reunite left and right. We reunite soul and personality and become a companion. We reunite light and darkness. And then we can use the light to redeem the darkness, you see. So this is a dynamic principle here. Cause and effect is not satisfied just by seeing that the karma of being a hateful bigot in one lifetime is that you get to come back and be the recipient of that hatred and bigotry in this lifetime. No, no, no. That's just the... That's not even retribution. That's just introducing you to the opposite that you shoved away from you, and by becoming it and identifying with it. And then the goal is to reconcile the two extremes in your own life. And instead of shoving away the opposite extreme, saying, "There but for the grace of God go I," and to develop a compassion that brings it back to you so that the two become as one. And so cause, a single cause can produce zillions of effects. And there's great dynamic to it, to that idea. It's never a single effect is an expression of multiple causes. No, no. It's a single cause can produce multiple effects. And all those effects are more or less equal. And so in one lifetime, we might explore this type of music. In another lifetime, we might explore another type of music. And gradually, we merge them all together into our own distinctive expression of divine harmony. This then leads us to the culmination, the lover's card, number 6 from the major arcana. A man and a female, again, looking into each other's eyes with desperate adoration and bringing us together. And of course, we have the archetypal forces pictured in the lower right hand corner and all the rods in the background, emphasizing that this is happening at the level of the abstract mind. And again, we understand that not only does nothing divide us, we have at the mental level, we have the power of cohesion to draw to us those opposite forces that we need in order to succeed. If you're a creative person, and let's say you're going to write as I do, you can't reject the opposite point of view. You have to embrace it, understand it, and integrate that in such a way that people can understand that that's an alternative. It may not be the best alternative, but together there's value in it. Together, it's the balanced presentation of the truth that counts. And that truth is never expressed in one extreme or the other. It's expressed by unifying the two halves. And so, for example, in the book that I'm putting the finishing touches on, that'll be ready in a couple of weeks, The Enumeration of Rights, it's almost ready to go to the printer after we do a final reading. In that book, I talk about rights as being critical in America because it links the individual citizen with the government, and that the idea of the spirit of America is to draw the individual citizen, as Lincoln put it, it's a government of the people, for the people, by the people. Not necessarily in that order. I don't remember what he said. yeah, whatever. It's something like that. And but without the people, there's no government, you see. And yet, from time to time, somebody arises that forgets that and thinks he's the government, not the servant of the governors, which is us, the people. And we haven't understood that concept in America, and it hasn't been taught us. And so we need to revive that. The Founding Fathers understood it, that all the power to govern comes from the people, and that it the Bill of Rights is meant to preserve the integrity of we the people. So there's this, what I'm doing here is yoking together the government and the people and not separating them as it has been for thousands of years. It used to be from the day that that fellow that came to his fellow human beings and said, there's wolves out there in the forest, let us band together and form a village and I'll be chief. From that moment on, they said, okay, you be chief. From that moment on, the chief said, you do this, you do that, I've got all the power. But now we're evolving a higher, better form of government in which the villagers say, no, 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 you took that power, but we didn't give it to you. You're going to have to be responsible to us. And that's the beauty of the American system. It demonstrates to the world how to do that. Not that the world's listening, but do they have a choice? Do they have an alternative? So, in any event, that's the case of yoking together the opposite extremes and using them both. Unless you work from both extremes, both opposites, back to the archetypal force, you'll never understand the archetypal force at the apex. You need the full triangle. You need A and B at the baseline and then C at the apex. If you don't embrace both A and B and see how they work together, you'll never comprehend C, because C is only interested in A and B working together. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments and questions. That's my take on the law of cause and effect. I consider it extremely important to the development of the mind. What the last couple of cards suggest here, with antecedents before it, is that the law of polar opposites, which is a subset of the law of cause and effect, work deliberately to produce conflict so that we can resolve it, so that we can see the stark contrast and find a way to yoke it together. That's our work. Not just to yoke ourselves to the soul, which is yoga, but to learn to draw together these seeming opposite forces and work in a way that satisfies both. All right, I'm going to stop and entertain comments and questions. Anybody? Talking about the law of cause and effect. We need to develop the mind that can understand that the moment a cause is set in motion, it produces its effect. It may be 10,000 years before we are able to recreate it in the physical plane, but it's not that we don't experience the effect. The cause and the effect happen simultaneously. In fact, the cause produces both opposite effects. Both effects that oppose one another. And out of that conflict, we learn. And as the Tibetan says at some point, it requires us to act. We can't sit around. Our world is being shaken. We've got to do something. And so the law of cause and effect forces us to take action, not just philosophically ponder the nature and meaning of life. So, let me stop there and again entertain comments and questions. Anybody? Well, I think I've run the gamut here from starting point to fulfillment. So that's it for tonight. Good luck working with the law of cause and effect, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks. Good night.